I was wondering what dogs thought we were doing when we play Magic. Because dogs can't see two-dimensional images, right? So to them, we're just like picking up blank pieces of cardboard and like flicking them around and like moving them and doing weird stuff with it. What do you think they think we're doing?
Honestly, I don't think dogs have much thought process to begin with.
No, dogs are highly intelligent and beautiful animals.
Yeah, I mean,
cats.
Unless you compare them to what they descended from, then they're just like the retarded offspring of a inbreeding wolf pack.
I mean, I've seen some pretty smart wolves. I've seen some stupid wolves. I've seen some brilliant dogs. I've seen some stupid dogs.
I've seen a lot of stupid dogs, but no, I will admit, you know, there are some smart dogs. But they have to be trained. Otherwise, they just go through life just being an idiot.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, everyone needs a little bit of training, right? Like, if you think about it in Magic, like, you have to be taught how to play. You just can't, like, magically pick it up and know what you're doing.
Unless you read. But I guess it's self-taught.
I don't know, man. All the words on those Magic cards can be difficult. I don't think we should make fun of anybody for not being able to read all the Magic cards.
No, I'm not saying, like, you know, not being able to read the cards. I'm just saying if you read how to play, then,
I mean,
you could be, yeah, that's what I mean by self-taught, not, you know,
but
being able to pronounce everything.
Sure. I don't know, like, my dogs are pretty good. Their biggest problem is they like to
yell at everything.
Since they're puppies together, like, if one gets scared, the other one tries to defend it. So, that kind of brother-sister kind of, like, twinsies-type relationship.
Right.
Which can be old, because, like, one is kind of like a coward. The other one's like, I'm a wiener dog, fear me, Rolf.
And then the other one has that whole thing where it's going to choke on its own. What's that one that just always sounds like it's dying when it barks? The fat one?
Oh, Xander. Xander doesn't count as a dog. That's a pork-bellied pig with hair.
It really is. Oh, my God. It's awful.
Well, this isn't a podcast about Travis and his bad pizza job. Wonderful pizza job. His bad people. This isn't a podcast about dogs and cats and other animals. This is a Magic the Gathering podcast. And I'm one of your hosts, Samus, and that is my other host, Travis.
It's me.
And if you're looking at it at the YouTube channel, which is how we record, we do a Google Hangout, and then we rip the audio out of the Google Hangout, you can actually see his lovely tattoo today.
Barely. I've decided. Dude, I'm grown like hippie. Look at this. Look how long my hair is.
Oh my goodness.
All
so long.
Inch of it.
So long. Almost can't see your amazing tattoos. It's insane.
Yeah.
So this week's title is Challenge Yourself to Troll, with the subtitle, Modern is Still Shitty. That one's me. If you can't figure it out. If you can't figure out who decided Modern was terrible, it's me, everybody. I'm sorry. I don't know, Travis, why are you trying to challenge people to troll? Like, What's your motto today, or what's your reasoning?
Well, it was more of a self-challenge for Last FNM, because I decided to go in there without playing any rare cards. So essentially, I just went in there with commons and uncommons. That includes lands. And I did fairly well. Like, I only lost one game. Or one match.
Didn't somebody challenge you to, like, play some deck that you've never played before, just, like, out of the blue?
Yeah, but he ended up going to GP Minneapolis, so he took his cards with him, so I couldn't play it. But yeah, I figure, because he basically said that you know, people can't just pick up the cards, you know, just pick up the deck without, you know, play testing it and be successful with it. Like, no, I can do it.
Right.
And
well, I want to talk more about this a little bit later on in the show.
Right.
Because of my, what I got to do this weekend. But I think there's some merit to that. I would not say every person can do that. I think there's a lot to do with the play skill of the player that's trying to do it. And, you know, as difficult as it is for me to say, you're a moderately skilled player.
All right. I just like to screw around too much.
Yeah, I mean, doing something weird out of nowhere, it can be a thing. So, I'll just real quickly start by saying I took your advice. I thought, Travis, maybe you had a valid point, and I would take your advice under heed. And I decided to play Modern this week for Friday Night Magic. And I asked Terrence, the guy who basically carries around all the different Modern decks, what he had available, and what he thought that I might like that was a little bit harebrained. And he really didn't have anything that appealed to me. So I just went ahead and grabbed my son's Modern deck that we kind of keep around. And it is a tooth and nail, right? Like, so I play land untapping dudes. I play enchantments to make the lands tap for more. And I try to get to 9 mana so I can entwine a tooth and nail. Or I grab an Emrakul and a Xenaghost,
yeah.
The god version of the Xenaghost. And, you know, give Emrakul, make her a 30-30 with haste and attack that first turn for, you know, Annihilator 6, flying, all that good stuff. Usually most people can't win when you attack them with a 30-30 Annihilator 6 creature. But, you know, sometimes they figure out a way, but I, you know, it doesn't happen very often.
Unless and, they have, like, a sack effect.
Yeah, like, usually I have a lot of those, you know, creatures and stuff, so it would take a lot to do that. It would probably take something like an overloaded return all permanents to your hand or whatever that spell is called.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. I have it right here. Go on with your story.
I was just going to say it'd take something like that. So I played it. I had a ton of fun.
Cyclonic Rift,
thank you. And so I'm going to say Tooth and Nail is my troll card of the week. Like, I did have fun. I was bored. It's so weird, right? Like, how could you have fun playing some games of Magic and the rest of the time you're just bored? And you're like, man, I don't even want to do that. And I think it came down to who I was playing against most of the time. Like, when I knew the deck that I was going to be playing against was going to be a challenge because the player is a challenge, I had fun. But the rest of the time, I just thought the format was boring. I don't know. What do you think? Am I just being a little B-word, or?
No, not necessarily, because I go through the same thing. Like, when I run up with, you know, into a player that I know has, I don't want to sound horrible about this, but lower skill than I do. And I know, you know, I'm going to be, like, basically coaching them a little bit in our games. It just kind of seems less fun to me.
Now, but, see, I don't necessarily mind helping somebody play, like, even my opponent, like, I enjoy that, like, helping them play. But, like, so we have some challenged people who like to play at our shop, right? And
like Joe?
Well, I'm going to say more challenged. Joe. But,
I just thought I'd give him crap.
But, so, like, this guy, for example, I don't want to give any names or anything, but, he's definitely, I don't know, His family tree didn't fork. Okay? He's got some challenges. And it's like a circling branch or something.
I was going to say, it's not like a crab tree where it tries to get away. It just circles back in.
It just merges in on itself. And he's a good guy, but he's loud. And he gets these weird ideas in his head. You know, again, all fine. You know, I don't dislike playing him other than the fact that he is loud usually. And I just completely bored, like, with what he was trying to do, what I was trying to do. Like, one turn he played I think it cost 2 mana, and you can spend 2 mana if it's in your graveyard and put it into the battlefield tapped. I'm like, this is not a modern card, buddy.
Right.
But I was like, whatever. I don't know. I comboed off early because I obviously didn't want this game to go on very long. And I'm just like, screw it. If there's something in his hand that can stop my combo, so be it. But of course he didn't. So then he's like, oh, there's no way I can win now. Like, that's unbeatable. I'm like, okay. I mean, it is. It's totally beatable. There's ways to defeat that deck pretty easily once you kind of know what it's doing. It's a one-trick pony, basically.
Right.
Or I don't want to say that. Like, it only wins one way. To win the other ways, it's much harder. But, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. He just sucked the fun. And he was my first round opponent. He just kind of sucked the fun out of the tournament. Right out of it for me.
Do you have the card that makes your creatures lands and then untaps them in the deck as well?
No. I don't have living. What is it called? Living something? Yeah, I don't run that.
Yeah, it's,
I have things in that deck for me. Are Genesis Hydra.
Okay. I guess that's all right.
One. I mean, when you can Genesis Hydra for like 11.
Rude Awakening. Like
you can Yeah, I don't have that one.
Yeah, but you're ramping,
is
right?
Is that the entwined one?
Yeah.
But I'm not ramping with lands. I'm ramping with
creatures.
And enchant. Yeah.
Weak.
I use the creatures to untap the lands, and I put enchantments on the lands. So the lands, like... So, one time, I had 3 Garrick's in my hand. But I didn't have enough mana to Tooth and Nail. I also had a Tooth and Nail. But I finally figured it out that I could play a Garrick. I had one land that tapped for 4 mana. So I could play a Garrick, untap 2 lands, floating a green. Play the other Garrick, untap 2 lands, float a green. Play the last Garrick, float a green, which gave me enough mana to entwine my Tooth and Nail to win the game. But I had to cast and destroy I had to cast all 3 Garricks in my hand, but I had to destroy 2 of them. So, like, it plays like a combo deck, but it doesn't accelerate lands. Someone was like, hey, would that deck do well with Explosive Vegetation? I'm like, no, that's not the kind of card for this deck. Like, more enchantments that tap for more mana would be for this deck, but it's fine. So, yeah, I lost one match. I went 3-1 in a 4-round Modern. And we were 1-1. We went to game 3, and I mulled a 4. So, with a good 7-card hand, I don't think that necessarily would have went that way, but we'll see what happens. But no, it was fun in the sense that I enjoyed doing something a little bit different. Not fun for me to play. There wasn't anything really challenging about the format or anything like that. On it. We'll talk more Modern, I think, a little bit later on. Travis, you have Virulent Plague listed as your troll card. What do you do this week with that?
Well, Okay, so the deck that I was playing, it was red and black, and I wasn't playing any tokens, but I knew that there's quite a few people at the store who had token-esque decks, and yeah, I just, two of the games that I played, they had, one person was playing Cryptolith Rites, which that one basically combos off of, the Cutthroats and the sure. Brood Monitor and that crap. Virulent Plague just shuts it down. And then,
depending on their version.
Right. And there's Green-White Tokens. It's completely ruined that deck. Because, obviously the Green-White Tokens, but they basically had to rely on Gideon attacking. And they really couldn't do anything outside of that because, Secure the Waste does nothing.
You can make emblems and you can get over it, but it is pretty rough.
Not when two of them hit the field in the same game.
I mean, there's a lot of emblems that you got to make, but yeah. He'll technically get there.
He would have had to use all four of the Gideons to make emblems.
Well, he could have used one very many times.
Right, but that wasn't happening. Like
you just plus them and then plus some more and make another emblem and plus some more and make another emblem.
Right.
Like, theoretically, you could get there.
Yeah, but he didn't. The only deck that I played against where I lost and the plague wasn't, like, it started off as being relevant, but then, late game happened. I played a black-red vampire deck apparently Kalidus is way better than a black-red vampire deck without rares. Who would have guessed?
Is very, very strong, yes.
Yeah. She's not strong against the Lightning Axe.
Still strong, just
vulnerable.
It is when it hits it, yeah. I think Virulent Plague is I think it's a good card right now in general. And if you are playing something like Green-White Tokens or something that is a relatively heavy token-based strategy, which there's a lot of right now. Like,
yeah.
Tokens in general right now are, I can't remember a time where there's been more tokens, more token production, more tokens like as a main strategy. Like, it seems very, very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Overloaded?
Abundant. Like, tokens in general right now are highly abundant in the current meta.
Right.
And something like a Verdant Plague is going to come in if there's a black deck out there that you're playing against.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where if you're playing that kind of strategy that based around tokens, you better have a way to deal with a Verdant Plague out of the sideboard. And I know, like, my green-white token-ish, it's also plus one matters deck. It currently doesn't have a sideboard at all, but Answers to Virulent Plague is one of the first things that I have in there. Like, I run main deck Dromoka's Commands. Dromoka's Commands?
Yeah.
So I do have a little bit of an out, but not as much as I would like.
Okay, but see, here's the thing. You don't need a sideboard, just all in all the time.
Well,
nope.
It's good to have a sideboard. I'm not going to sit there and say that I've always played with a sideboard because I oftentimes do not. Like, I just don't have a sideboard I get this 60 card deck built and I just haven't figured out what I want in my sideboard. I'm just like, let's roll. I know a lot of people really build with the idea that you really have a 75 card deck. I don't do that, to be honest.
You have a 60 card deck.
Yeah, I have a 60 card deck and then the 15 card sideboard. But
yeah, and then you have some dead cards.
So, I mean, I'm one of those people, though, that I'll build a 60 card deck and take it to tournaments and play and have a good time and be like, well, I should have thought about that. I guess a reason to, that's a sideboard card I need to think about to deal with this. Or, and again, I, for bigger tournaments like PPTQs or GPTs or whatever, I would definitely walk in with a thought through sideboard. But I don't know. It's the reason I bring it up is because, and I guess we'll use this as an opportunity. We're going to move some things around. I have one of our main discussion points here, finding your thing. So like this weekend, we had a bunch of friends just happen to be in a nearby town. Like we all just came together for no real reason. Like the holiday helped, like having a 3-day weekend helped. But my best friend from Colorado came down. A couple of our longtime friends came down. So we were all like hanging out in Manhattan. And, you know, it was getting kind of late. The wife like curled up on the couch and was kind of going to sleep a little bit. And we're like, you know what, let's play a little Magic. And we could have pulled out some Commander decks, but I didn't want to go out to the car to go get them. But I had already brought in my Standard decks. I'm like, hey, why don't you guys just play Standard? And we'll, you know, I'll kind of go back and forth and coach as needed to kind of help. I gave John, friend of the show, John, LJ, I gave him my green-white token slash +1/+1 matters deck. And I gave my friend Zach my Mardu control list that I've been playing for a while. And because I figured, you know, he's like, yeah, I like playing control decks. I'm like, well, here's the best control deck I've currently found in Standard. You know, here you go. And I know John likes to turn things sideways, so I thought naturally these things all made sense. And it did not jive as well as I thought it would, to be really, really honest. Like, it just didn't – I think John would have got there. I think he would have figured the deck out relatively quickly. He did win one of the games that they played.
Out of how many?
Well, I think they only played one because it was like midnight when they started playing. So he played one against me and lost. I mean, I was playing that control deck and I kind of knew what I needed to do. And then I played Zach as the green-white deck and was able to get there again because I knew what to do, where they were kind of struggling on figuring out how the decks worked. And that's kind of the discussion point I wanted to put out there is finding your thing. Like, I've been struggling for the last couple of weeks now trying to figure out where I want to go for Modern, right? Where do I want to – where can I find that that cross point of challenging and fun for me that's also affordable but yet also scratches my itches? And it really became evident to me watching my friends play, even though these are the kind of decks that I associate with something that they would play and they would be skilled at, it was not their thing at all. The, you know, like I said, Zach, he thinks of himself as a control player, but he thinks of himself as a control player in the traditional sense of casting counter spells, which I thought was weird because the deck, last time I saw him come up, the last deck he had was a green-white taxes deck. So I really thought any kind of control was kind of more up his alley, but I was totally wrong. He really, if he's going to be playing in his mind a control deck, it really needs to be a blue counterspell-based control deck. Similar thing kind of with John is John wants to tap out on his turn to advance his board. And like there was a situation where I killed with a Kolaghan's command. I killed his Hangarback Walker and I killed his creature. Right? So then he had 2/1/1 flyers. And I had an Omnixilus Planeswalker out on the field that I was just upticking to draw extra cards. Well, he's like, all right, I'm going to, I think he had a Nissa in his hand. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to make Secure the Waste tokens. I'm like, okay. That's and attack on Nixilis. I'm like, okay. I untapped, drew a couple of cards, found an untapped mana source, played it, played Chandra, negative ticked or down ticked for one. Blew up his board. Where if he would have just done something a little simpler, where he just passed a turn and then, when I said go, made those tokens, I would not have down ticked to kill two flying tokens. Right? So Chandra would have, or I would have made the three ones and attacked, and he could have made tokens blocked if he wanted to, or he could have taken, he had a lot of options at that point. But it's just not his thing to play things at instant speed at end of players' turns. He's not there as a Magic player again after his long break. So even though, again, I think an aggressive deck where he's antonym his creatures is his style of deck, it's just the way the green-white tokens deck, for example, can work or does work, it wasn't his thing, where Zach, playing my Mardu control deck, like, had a problem realizing when something was a threat and when he needed to deal with it and when he could just let it sit there and not care. And I think because of that, instead of drawing cards when he should have been drawing cards, he was trying to answer threats with the whatever he had on hand. It really kind of set him in a non-enjoyment kind of factor. So I think there's this finding your thing concept, like what it is that makes you happy when you're playing Magic. Like, is it, I mean, obviously for you, it's just like messing with people.
Right. It's basically like bringing the card Rain of Salt to the table and then throwing it at them. That's what makes me happy.
How this works.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I talked a lot.
For me personally, my thing is, as long as I'm laughing and the people around me are laughing, I don't care if I win. My opponent could be, the saltiest person on the planet at the time. But if we have, the two opponents on each side of us, four other players, laughing around us, that's all I care about, is as long as the majority of the people are, happy and, enjoying themselves. Like, to me, that's what is just the overall enjoyment with the crowd. Winning to me, it's fun, but making someone salty from playing a game that they purposely want to play, that right there, that's the key to playing for me.
Yeah, and I think I talk about it because, right, like, for me, it's, when I think about Magic, I want to enjoy myself, but I also want to win. I want to feel like I am being successful at this thing that I'm spending time and energy on, And unfortunately, the easiest way to measure success is by victory, right? Like, did you win? Did you lose? How'd you do? Did you go 3-1? Did you go 4-0? Did you day two? Like, these are all questions that Magic players ask, and it's a measurement of success. And I want to be able to tell people, yeah, like, I 4-0'd, or I made day two, or I drew in this finals because I really didn't need the win, but I got all the packs I drew with did need the win, Like, yeah, he really wanted to go to the regional, so, and I don't care, so I took all the packs, and he walked out with the invite, Like, there's a lot of people who just take those kind of deals, and to me, that's a measure of success on its own. So I like being successful. But at the same time, there are strategies that I find more compelling than others. And I can play other versions. Like again, this combo deck. I think this combo deck can be very fun. If the deck that you're playing against has a lot of interaction or understands how the deck works. But if they were playing like a totally different game and no one's interacting with each other and it's just a race to see who combos off first, those are games I don't find to be a lot of fun. So with that in mind, I think I've decided that I'm going to purchase my way into the Eldrazi and Taxes deck that we kind of talked about last week.
The one that I got excited for?
Yeah, I mean, that had a lot to do with it, actually, but most of these cards really made a big went a long way to getting me going. So, like I said, I was in Manhattan, where the card shop there in Manhattan, Goblins Games, is very, very awesome. We work with them with the arena to like co-coordinate events and stuff, like the double PPTUs that we have coming up at the end of the month. But he is one of those guys who's get on a card and get full value out of it than, say, like Todd, who owns the arena, who's more likely to just keep moving the card. Like if a card has, let's say a card is worth, is valued at $10, Joey might sell it to you for $9, you know, and Todd sell it for, but they'll both buy it like at $6.
Right.
And a card for 6 months before it can behooves, where Todd will plan on turning that card over in like a week or 2 weeks.
Or even that day.
Or, yeah, even later that day. Like, that's just how his mindset is. I'll make more money in the long run by turning over cards at a less value, but more frequently than a guy who sits there and has them, you know, for a month and gets more value out of it. You know, less overhead, stuff like that. Now, for me, that's really great because that means that cards like Thalia, Garden of whatever it is, and these Eldrazi Temples are cards that won't sit around at the arena. So I couldn't go grab a playset of these cards at the arena just any time. Cards that I can, you know, spend a little bit more money on and go get them from Joey when I'm in town and be like, hey, I'm going to buy my way into this. I need 3 Flicker Wisps. I need 4 Talias. I need 4 Eldrazi Temples. And he's like, all right, well, I have 3 Talias, but I have everything else here. Boom. And within 5 minutes, he was able to hand me those cards. The only thing he didn't have was the Leon Arbiters, which, again, I think they're important, but I think I can track them down separately if I really need to. But, I mean, it's nice to have that option. So I guess before I get too far off subject here, I'm hoping this is going to be my thing in Modern, right? What I'm kind of worried about is there's no way to currently in this sideboard interact with like a Boggles deck, which basically there will always be a Boggles deck at my local shop. And there's a 100% of the way to deal with something like Affinity or Tron or something like that comes out of the sideboard.
Right.
But I guess, you know, I'll take it. I don't know. This is the deck I decided to go with, at least for now, and give it a shot and see what happens. Worst case scenario, this will be another Modern deck in my arsenal that sits there and never gets played because it doesn't do what I want it to do.
Right. Well, I mean, you can even splash something to deal with Boggles if that's your only real threat.
Well, I don't even necessarily know if it's a threat. I'm thinking of my local meta and what's there, right? And again, my meta is a little bit weird because one guy basically supplies, you know, 50% or 60% of the decks. So it kind of goes off of, okay, is his wife there? If his wife's there, she's going to play Boggles. Is he there? Then he could play anything played in the last 3 weeks because that's kind of like his mental rule. So now, okay, what have I seen him play in the last few weeks? Like, okay, he played Merfolk the last 2 weeks. Okay, so he might be on Tron this week or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you kind of figure that out. And then from there, you're like, okay, well, if he's on this and she's on that, then what did people probably borrow? Like, Terry's here. Okay, so he's either borrowing a red deck or Rush Weenie deck. Okay, so that's kind of put him on the meta. And you can kind of, once you figure out what people's things are, right, you can kind of figure out your local meta. So whether this is a deck for the local meta or if this becomes a deck that's better for, you know, tournament scenes. We have two PPTQs that we just scheduled for August that are going to be modern both days. So if I want to go to Goblin Games and play in their tournament that day, this might be the deck that I have to take just because it's the one I have that's the here and ready to go. So yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's an interesting question. I'd love to know what other people think about this deck in general, what the sideboard is, strength and weaknesses, basically anything. I'd also like to know what people think about this whole finding a thing. Like, I can play anything. I can play a combo deck. I can play an aggro deck. I can play mid-range. I can play that stuff. But finding what I feel is good and me for this season is always a little bit of a challenge. This season, I'm like a mid-range control. Last season, really, I was a like an aggro combo deck using impact trimmers. No, I just it varies, but since modern doesn't rotate really, right? Like standard does, it's hard to find what's you at a given, in my opinion, it's hard for me to find my thing in modern because it's not cycling around. It's not changing, like locking into something for potentially multiple years or multiple seasons is a real challenge for me.
Well, see, I constantly change decks. Like my thing is different every week. I don't have a set play style. Because I can play everything, and I like to play everything. It's just really it depends on what cards I have as to what I'm going to play. And then, I just get tired of playing the same decks, which is why I brew all the time, and which is why I like to play draft and sealed with limited formats, really. It's just constantly something new.
Right. And I don't disagree. Like, I guess I'm a little misleading when I talk about a deck for the season. Like, I tend to have a deck for what I consider to be, like, higher level tournaments. And then I'll mess around for things for, like, Friday Magic and Winnow Boxes and stuff like that. Like, right now, we're putting together this sweet Esper Pack standard list. And I think that'll be a lot of fun in standard, you know, for a tournament or two. You know, like the last Winnow Box, you know, I switched to the 4-color rally deck or 3-color, whatever. One of the rally decks. I thought, well, I'll just fiddle with this. And I had a lot of fun doing it. But at the same time, it's like, if it was a more serious tournament, like if I really wanted to win, I think I probably would have played that instead. So I don't know. It is weird. I would like to know what people think. What they're playing, how they rotate around. Do they have a way to kind of figure out, like, hey, I'm really having fun with this deck. Should I see about playing something similar to it in a different format or from season to season? How do they decide what their thing is? I don't know. It's interesting, I think, to me to kind of think about that as a mental exercise. Speaking of mental exercises, Dan, one of our listeners, the gentleman who I've talked about numerous times, sent us a request, and he would like us to talk about the Magic the Gathering card Talent of the Telepath. And I guess he's in a situation where he recently cast this thing and was spell mastery and basically wiped an opponent's board. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Travis, when I mentioned that we wanted to talk about it, you were like, I could talk about it for days.
Yeah. Talk. Okay, so when this card first got revealed, you know, previewed, spoiled, whatever you want to call it, fell in love with it because it combines two of the things that I like the most in Magic. Milling your opponent and taking their stuff. And, I mean, this one, I mean, sure, you're always going to get the mill seven. You're not always going to get to cast a spell. And you're not always going to get to cast two spells. But for four mana, milling seven and potentially playing two of their spells from their graveyard without paying for it, that's a really, really good card.
So let's just do the quick card rundown here. For those of you who may not know, Talon of the Telepath is a blue and two mana for a sorcery. Target opponent reveals the top seven cards of his or her library. You may cast an instant or sorcery from among them without paying its mana cost. That player puts the rest into his or her graveyard. Spell Mastery. Of course, Spell Mastery is if you have two or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, you may cast up to two revealed instant and or sorcery cards instead of one. There we go. I know this is a card that my son really loves. The real challenge is paying a blue and a colorless worth the opportunity to potentially send their sorcery?
Yes.
Okay, and how likely is it you're going to hit two?
Well, see, that's not the point. The point is, if you're playing with this card, you have some sort of mill plan going.
Not necessarily, I don't think. I think this can really say four mana, remove two of their removal spells, kill two of their creatures.
Yeah.
Like, that could be your plan.
Remove one of their planeswalkers.
Sure.
Because Ruinous Path is still in.
I'm just saying this could be, like, it may not read to everybody as mill seven.
Right.
It could read, you know, remove one of their things. Take basically two for one then for four mana.
Right. Well, see, and at that point, if you're playing a control deck and, you know, your whole, you know, hopes of removing something that they're playing is, you know, maybe it's in the top seven cards of your deck, then is that really worth playing it?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Well, see, and that's why if you're playing it, most likely you're on a mill plan. Because that's an additional hand out of their deck.
Sure. I mean, I guess my question is, and I'm not sure where Dan's playing this card at. He's probably playing it in his Brain in the Jar deck, would be my guess. So with the Brain in the Jar deck, the whole idea is everything has additional value, right?
Right. And everything costs one.
Right. Most things cost one. But it gives you the option to cast numerous spells a turn. And I think that's where he's playing this at. I think it's probably like a two of in this Brain in the Jar deck. And in that case, it seems okay to me, but not like great. I don't know. I think my Brain in the Jar deck is a mill deck. But I don't necessarily know if everybody's Brain in the Jar deck is. For example, I know Hunter's essentially playing the MTG version of the mono blue Brain in the Jar deck.
Yeah, the boring one.
I think Dan is playing like a four or five color Brain in the Jar deck. Mine is Esper at the moment, although it might be going to just mono blue in general. I don't know. I think it's an interesting card, and I think it's got a lot of different text on it depending on what your situation is, but I don't necessarily know if I'd spend seven mana or four mana to mill seven cards.
I would.
To me, that would make the cut. Like, for four mana, right? Like, you cantrip and you have a Sphinx's Tutelage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems like a better mana to me than mill seven. Now, if you're in draft, that's a different story. Or I guess you could run these talent of the telepaths and then the mill 13 or whatever it is, and then a bunch of control spells and hope to get there. But I just don't know if that's a viable enough strategy in standard to plan on getting there more than just once or twice.
Well, then don't play a playset.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you play.
I guess I don't see how this thing gets played then. In a mill strategy, I don't see how this card gets played. Like, what else is in a deck that's a mill strategy where this card gets played?
Like, I'm thinking, like, this card is two in the main and two in the side. So if you know they have spot removal, and they're also playing things, it'd be better to bring them in against that. But also, I mean, I don't think it's with Startle Awake and with Sphinx's Tutelage in standard right now. I don't think it's a 4-0, but I do love the card. Hold on.
Oh, we got a surprise visitor.
Okay. Bring me the phone. Where's your mom awake?
Nephews. Nephews are the best. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know. To me, this card seems all right, but like this card is really good against like what I'm doing with the Mardu control deck. Terrible against the green-white token deck. So, I don't know. I'm not sure what to do with it.
You know it's really great against the green-white token deck? Engulf the Shore.
Engulf the Shore. Which one's Engulf the Shore?
4 mana, 3 and a blue, instant speed, return all creatures to their owner's hands with toughness equal or less than the number of islands you control.
Well, see, that would be a good card for this deck, right?
Yes. It's a great card for any deck that runs islands.
Like green, blue. So you can, like, return cards to your hand from your graveyard and just keep going.
What?
Din Protectors, baby.
Oh, right. That's a card still.
It is a card still.
I haven't seen it in a while.
I have them in my green-white tokens deck. But again, my green-white token deck has a secondary theme of +1/+1 matters. I don't know. It's a card. I don't know what to do with it. If you know what to do with it, email us at twotrollsbrew@gmail.com.
I'll build something for this week and play it.
Okay, sounds good. It probably doesn't cost very much. We might even be able to just grab it on Magic Online.
I have them.
On Magic Online?
Oh, no, on paper. I picked up a playset when they came out.
Oh, I'm sure I've got all these cards on paper. So Nathan sent us a list. He heard last week's show where I kind of talked about... what's the ego spell called?
Altered.
Altered Ego? Yeah, there we go, gold. Altered Ego. So he sent us a list. It's in the show notes, Travis, if you want to kind of follow along. Basically, it's Altered Egos. One, a Singleton, Dragonlord Atarka, Dragonlord Solemgar. 4 Din Protectors, Explosive Vegetations, Nissa's Renewals, Oath of Nissa, Sylvan Advocates, Tireless Tracker, and Woodland Bellower.
Yes.
A Big Dad Regrowth. And then in black,
the Bellower isn't the regrowth.
Yeah, Bellower's the regrowth.
No, Bellower is the one that fetches for another creature.
Oh, fetches a 3?
Yeah.
Okay, that's different then. Does it play it?
Yeah. You go get a...
like Bellow, go get an Altered Ego, the copies
of... No, because...
And then go get...
Because Altered Ego costs 4. Woodland Bellower, you have to get a... CMC 3 or less non-legendary green creature? It's very specific. But
So it's go get Tireless Tracker?
Yeah, go get Tireless Tracker, go get Sylvan Advocate.
Man, it was so much sicker a second ago when I thought I got Altered Ego.
Right, it was so much sicker when it was broken. Yeah, I understand. Right.
I'm just like, oh, Woodland Bellower, go get an Altered Ego to go get it. Now I'll turn it into a Woodland Bellower to go get an Altered Ego to make another.
Right.
Like an army of 6/4s or whatever they are. All right, I thought that was the regrowth guy, though. I don't know. It could be okay. So black, we're running 2 Languish, 3 Ultimate Prices, and then red by itself, we're running 1 Cast. Sideboard, we have some Clipped Wings, some Fire Impulses, some Kelitas, some more Languish, Ruinous Path, Ultimate Price, and Unwalled Hydra. I'm not sure which one that is.
That's the...
A big 6/6?
No, that's the baby Titan.
Yeah, he's a big 6/6, right?
He's an XX.
Oh, is the X equal to lands you have?
Yes, and he is... What was it? Just... I know he has reach, but does he have Vigilance too? Oh, I can't remember. I know he has reach.
He, like, tutors out a land when he comes into play, or 2 lands when he comes into play?
Yeah, he gets a land.
Okay. So, yeah,
Oh, man.
I don't know, this...
That's sick, playing it with the Altered Ego.
Right.
Oh, that's mean. That's fun.
Like, I think this is a really good idea at the core, right? Like, he's running 8 man lands, right? Sylvan Advocates. So he can Altered Ego out into more Sylvan Advocate goodness, which I think is great. Especially if you have a few lands out there. Like, if you have 6 lands, you Altered Ego for 6 into a Sylvan Advocate. That all of a sudden becomes, like, an unkillable monster. I don't even want to think how big that Sylvan Advocate is.
Why? Like
6/7 or something.
Why not transverse the Uvenwild in here?
Because it really goes off with Delirium, right?
Well, I mean, even at the beginning, if you just go get a land that you need.
That's true. That could be okay. So we've got Evolving Wilds to go get to go be lands.
Right.
We have plenty of creatures to die. Right. We have Nissa's Renewals, Languish as sorceries. Oh, Explosive Vegetation as a sorcery. And then, for instance, we have Ultimate Price.
Yeah, but we also have Oath of Nissa. As enchantment.
But it doesn't really go to the graveyard, hopefully, with just 2 of them.
I mean, if it does, oh well.
Like, I could see Oath of Nissa being your...
Right.
Traverse, whatever.
Just,
I could see
just
that
the 2 of as an extra tutor.
Yeah, because there's not... what am I looking for here? You don't have a really good way to go tutor up, like your Singleton, Dragonlord Itarka, or Solemgar, or Outcast. Like, everything else, you just, like, hope... You can draw into. You can draw into Den Protectors, or Sylvan Advocates, or Tireless Trackers, and not a big deal, right? And then if you tutor up with Woodland Bellower, a creature, a green creature that costs 3 or less... Like, you have a couple of good targets, but nothing, like, amazing. But you don't have a good way to go find this Outcast or these other green creatures or these other Singletons. Where, if you have, you know, like you said, the Overwald, or I don't understand why you don't have the Recruiter in here, the Duskwatch Recruiter. Like, this seems like the perfect deck for that, too. I also don't know if I'd be running Languish, like, I understand why it's probably in here, because your guys really don't die to Languish.
Right, and tokens.
Right, and there are a lot of tokens, but at the same time, like, Ruinous Pet or Radiant Flames out of the sideboard, stuff like that. I just don't know if you need Languish in the main. I think you could probably just do. I don't know. I bet there's something better. And if you're doing, let's see, what are our colors here exactly? Green,
Sultai.
Black. Yeah, we're Sultai.
Splashing in red for Atarka?
Yeah, Atarka and Dragon Lager. Dragon Master Outcast.
Oh, yeah.
Off of, looks like, Two Mountains.
Yep.
Dragon Lord of Tarka does a real good job cleaning up tokens, too. By the way.
Plus, he's a nice creature.
It's a she. He's a lady.
How do you know?
They talk about how that she's a she.
When did they talk about it?
I don't know, in one of the cards.
Oh, well, okay.
If you read all the words on the card, what apparently I don't know how to do, you find out that she's a lady. I don't know. Overall, I think this list is fine. I would like to see it played before I do some tweaking. But I definitely think that the Oath of Nissa's probably could be the other tutor spell. And if that is the case, I think you could probably even switch some things and put in for that particular tutor spell. And kind of act a little bit more toolboxy. You know, use Altered Egos as a way to play your creature a second time, basically. So you tutor up the first one and then have an Altered Ego to play a second one.
Right.
I don't know. I think Altered Egos might be really good in your Talented Telepath green blue deck, Travis.
Who said I was playing green blue?
I did. I just said it.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I have to do it now.
Yeah, that's how that works. I think that'd be good, because then you can, like, play these creatures and then bounce them all back to your hand when you play the what was the blue spell you said again? That returns all creatures less than the islands.
You know.
I don't. That's why I asked.
Engulf the Shore.
Engulf the Shore. So yeah, like, you play Altered Egos, come back to your hand. You can recycle, come into play triggers. You play Engulf the Shore, put your creatures back in your hand. You can even have a couple of Crash of Tentacles in there. Oh, sounds like a beating.
I think I'm going to do that now.
Well,
I just be, well, I don't know.
Think about it.
That sounds fun.
You think about it. You get back to us. I think we're going to go ahead and wrap the show up here. It is Memorial Day Monday for us, so we got to get out and get swole at the gym and see some family and whatnot. But, if you like the show, check us out at samusgrobo.com, or, of course, mtgcast.com is another great way to get a hold of us. If you would like to send us an email, like Nathan did, like Dan did, the email is the2trollsbrew@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow us at Twitter. Travis is TurtlePower319, and I'm Samus Grobel, all one word. But highly jump over to twitch.tv/SamusGrobel and give me a follow over there. I stream almost every day to some extent or another. Travis is not yet. But hopefully we're going to get him streaming some more, and I think that'll be really exciting. So, again, the easiest way to kind of know when we go live and do stuff, twitch.tv/SamusGrobo, give us a follow. We'd really appreciate it. So for this week's game, Travis, we're doing Would You Rather.
I would rather have three more Altered Egos.
Well, I mean, I suppose you could probably find them if you look hard enough.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Okay, ask your question.
With Walker of the Waste, does Altered Ego, or does a I mean, I know Altered Ego becomes, like, however big it is when it comes in, right? Does it also stay? Yeah, it's copied.
Yeah, it's copied, so it'll adjust.
So, the other question I have, Eldrazi Mimic. If you have that out, you know, let's just say you have five Waste on the field. When Walker of the Waste comes into play, it comes in as a 9/9. Would the Mimic become a 9/9?
I imagine so.
Sweet. I know what I'm going to probably
do. Doesn't Walker of the Waste get the pluses in all zones?
Yeah, it gets +1/+1 for each lane you control named Wastes.
But does it get it in all zones? I think it does, right? So it's a 9/9 in your hand before you even play it?
Yeah. Because it doesn't say enter the battlefield. It just says it gets it.
Right. So they changed the, I don't know when exactly, but they set the rule for if something has a static effect like that, it checks it in basically all zones.
Right. Okay.
I believe.
Cool. Well,
so would you rather, Travis?
Yeah.
Use a touch screen on all your devices or use a mouse and keyboard on all of your devices? So like your TV.
Oh, no. Mouse and keyboard.
Your phone. Your phone. Your radio.
Well, see, and here's the thing about
mouse and keyboard, or everything's touchscreen.
Well,
everything.
I'm gonna go mouse and keyboard.
Do you have a watch?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't pay attention to time unless I'm at work.
Okay. So your phone,
because
keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, I could go back to a flip phone.
Okay.
Like the flip, the old phones that had the
I know you talked about.
Flipped it up and it's got the little QWERTY.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I could do that.
It has like a little pull-out mouse.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
I mean, I can. You can run a computer without a mouse, so you can run a phone without one.
Well, this specifically says mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, but just because they're both there doesn't mean you have to use both.
No, you have to use them both. Okay, so today's questions are powered by, was it either I.O.?
Yeah, or either.
Either?
Which either?
So, according to this, Travis, you are in the minority here. 69% to 31%.
Oh, well. I don't like having my screens have, you know, prints on them. Like, it irritates me when I'm at work and some little crib midget touches the glass door and then I have to go clean it.
Like, you're a League of Legends player, right?
Right.
How much harder would League of Legends be if you had to do touchscreen the whole time?
Oh, I would just kill everybody.
Gotta be tough.
IRL.
Would you rather live with no electronics or live with no friends? Friends. So this should be an easy question for you.
No electronics.
No electronics? Jeez.
I have books and I have paper magic.
That's true. League of Legends, though, my friend.
Yeah, whatever.
Do you have friends where you live now?
Yeah. I mean,
God, you're such
such a
social butterfly.
Yeah, it's really weird because I hate being around people.
Yeah, you just hate everyone.
Oh, it's kind of awkward because, you know, I hate being around people, but everyone wants to be my friend because I have this award-winning cynical personality.
It's award-winning now?
I have declared it that.
Give it an award?
Yeah, I gave myself an award. Right,
well, you're in the majority here, 67% to 33%. If you were lost in space, would you rather run into a full-grown alien from Alien or run into the Predator?
Mm.
A xenomorph from Aliens.
Right.
Or, I don't actually know what the Predator's name is as a species.
I don't think they have. I think Predator is their species.
No, they have to have a species.
Oh, well, right? I would rather run into a Predator.
Because they're just so cool looking.
Right. And as we learned in the first one, if you're not hostile towards them, then they won't kill you.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, yeah? Well, it worked for that Mexican dude.
In the first one?
Yep.
What Mexican dude in the first one didn't die because he was not hostile?
I remember he was
armed.
He was a native, and he just dropped his weapon, and, like, they just let him live or whatever.
Right. That wasn't – he wasn't hostile. He wasn't armed.
Yeah, well, see, there you go.
He couldn't fight back. That's it.
And Predators, well, at least the alien versions, they like a challenge. I mean, you know, human predators, they obviously things, but alien predators like a challenge.
Yeah, I don't know if every one of them likes a challenge. I'm not so sure. man, there's got to be... I'll have to look around. Well, let's see if I can find it. Okay, so Run Into a Predator. You are in the majority, 54% by 46%.
So
while, I would agree with you because the Predator would just kill me.
Right.
But the alien might take me back to its hive or its nest and make me birth baby aliens.
Right, and as... you know, you've watched the Jay and Silent Bob movies.
I have.
As Jay would say, he would rather F the alien.
Okay.
No, he would. I'm trying to keep it PG-13, so I didn't say that word.
I understand. I get what you're saying. I just, like, in my mind, Travis, you should be like, I don't want to be a father. So I definitely want to run to the Predator.
And just not get killed. So,
all right, last one.
Hold on. From what I'm gathering, even though there's no official name for the Predator, the name Yalcha and Hishquintian, whatever, have been used in the expanded universe for them.
Oh, yeah. Here you go, Yasha.
Yeah. Y-A-U-T-J-A and Hishkutin. But, you know, it's also Wikipedia, so who knows if that's true.
Well, I find this in the Alien vs. Predator Wikipedia. So, I don't know. Because, like, they never talk about xenomorphs in the movies, right? You got the xenomorphs from the book series.
Right.
That came after. So, I don't know. It's, I definitely think that it's, this is probably it. How did you say it again?
Yeah, Yalcha.
Yalcha? It's gotta pronounce like, I can't even think of it now. I don't know. There's a snake monster in Dungeons & Dragons that's very similar to that. I can't think of it. All right. So last question. Probably one of our favorite questions. It seems to come up, I think, a lot for us.
Cool.
Would you rather be the parent of Adolf Hitler or Osama bin Laden?
Hitler.
You'd rather be Hitler's mommy and daddy?
Yeah.
Daddy?
Yeah, because... at least Hitler invented the Volkswagen, so...
At least he did something positive with his life?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure.
If you watch Osama bin Laden's life in reverse, it's the story of a sea monster coming out of water to destroy two towers.
I suppose. A lot of time spent on a machine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no, definitely I'd be Hitler's parents because, well, like I said, he caused the Volkswagen to exist.
You want to be a white German man, is that saying?
He wasn't German.
Yeah, he was...
He was from Austria.
Austria, yeah, Austria. All right, well, never mind. I take it all back. You once again outsmarted me with your crazy Hitler facts.
Yay!
Congratulations. All right, everybody. I'm Samus. He's Travis. Thanks for watching/listening. If you, Travis does have his webcam up and running now. So if you would like to see his beautiful tattoos, you can do so at youtube.com/samusrobo. Uh-oh, he's eyeballing some probably attractive person.
That's definitely a MILF.
Oh, a MILF even.
Yeah. That's what I love about apartment complexes. All the single ladies live here.
All the single ladies. Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for watching, everybody. Travis?
Troll on.
Sign us off. Troll on, everybody.